As I was looking at the lectionary texts, I was drawn to Hebrews, which is hardly surprising whenever Hebrews is there. I realized a while ago that Hebrews has become one of my go-to books over the last, I don't know how many years. And when I'm in a kind of crisis, or when I'm just sort of, I have the Bible in front of me and I think I just want to read something, I almost always end up at Hebrews. And I'm not entirely sure why, other than it continually consistently provides the comfort that I need at particular times. And it's got all kinds of really good things in it. So as I was looking at it today, I realized that we have another one of those lists. And as I've mentioned before, lists are frequently show up in Scripture. And lists as lists are never intended as an exhaustive collection of whatever they're listing. They're almost always a bit of an illustration or give you some ideas, and this list is no different. The list itself is quite different than the lists we get in Paul, who sort of does almost point form kinds of things. I think Paul would have loved PowerPoint, for example, and he would have just said, these are the things, look at this slide and memorize it and you will do well. The writer of Hebrews, whoever that is, isn't quite as straightforward as that, but when I was looking through this selection, there's a number of things that we should do, or at least some things that we can do. But why? And that's what I realized I wanted to talk about today, as a reminder of why is it we do some of these things. So we're going to look through most of the list, I think, and just say, well, why do we do this? So for the first one, keep on loving each other as brothers. Okay, that's pretty straightforward. But then it says, do not forget to entertain strangers, for by so doing, some people have entertained angels without knowing it. Hospitality, which is what this is talking about, hospitality is good for us. And sometimes it can be really good for us because you might end up with angels without even knowing it. And we see that in the Old Testament in particular, where people interact with strangers who turn out to be angels or messengers of God in some particular way. And we wouldn't want to miss that. And we need to be careful here that we're not being too concerned about an angel coming. The idea isn't that be hospitable to people because it might be an angel, and if you're not hospitable, the angel will burn down your house. You know, that's not what we're talking about. This isn't some kind of a fearful thing. When people entertained angels without knowing, they frequently ended up with extraordinary things, in words of encouragement, reminders that God was going to do what God had always said, children were going to come where you had no idea you were ever going to be able to have children, that sort of thing comes with angelic visitations. So it's not just that you want to make sure you get whatever you can, but being hospitable is good for us. Not just in the what we receive, but also in what we give. Because we'll talk about it a little bit later as well, but being hospitable means giving of what you have to someone else, not because they can repay you, but just because they need it. They need a place to stay, they need a meal, they need the pleasure of your company. These are all wonderful gifts that we can give that enrich us in the giving. Being hospitable has virtually no downside. Oh, sure, sometimes it can happen that people will abuse your hospitality, but that's really the minority. And most of the time, after we've brought people into our lives in a hospitable way, we feel better about them and about ourselves. And we're doing what God has asked us to do. It's a wonderful thing. We go down to the next verse. It says, remember those in prison as if you were their fellow prisoners, and those who are mistreated as if you yourselves were suffering. Well, what that's talking about is being empathetic, about exercising empathy. And empathy is a complicated kind of thing, but the easiest way to think of empathy is it's the ability to put yourself in the shoes of someone else, to imagine what they are feeling. And that's what this writer is talking about. When you think of people in prison, when you think of people in a difficult time, think of them not as, oh, God must be judging them, or, oh, I'm really glad I'm not them. Instead of that, think of what it would be like if you were there also. Because being an empathetic person also makes you a better person. Because we know what it's like to be around people who don't have empathy, and it's kind of disturbing. And you may be thinking, I don't know anybody like that. And I say, have you ever known a toddler? Toddlers don't have empathy yet. I've never met one who does, and the one who lives in my house most certainly does not, which is just fine. He's not at that level. He will learn it, and it'll be great. But right now, when Eli comes up and hits you with something because he's just hitting things, there's no malice. He's just seeing what happens when he takes this object and applies it to that object, and sometimes you are the second object. You can say till the cows come home, Eli, do you want me to do that to you? And it makes no sense to him, because what are you talking about? I'm doing this. You are not part of the process. You're just the end. You know, you're just part of, you're the target. He will learn empathy, because we all do. And there will come a time when he will no longer hit you, as he's just, as far as I can tell, he's just enjoying moving his hand and hearing the sounds that things make. Who among us, even as adults, hasn't enjoyed hitting the bottom of a barrel or a bucket or something just to see what it sounds like? We all do those sorts of things. I, for one, when I go down the stairs in my building, I've got a large enough ring on my right hand that I can hit the railing. And I'm trying to figure out what the sound sequence is on the six floors down, because each railing is slightly different. They're in tune, which is astonishing to me, but I just need to figure out what it is, which gives you some idea of the internal workings of my brain, and you're probably quite glad you don't have the same. But the time will come when Eli won't hit me, not because he's afraid of me, but because he goes, I don't like being hit. So I'm not going to do that, because if I was in that situation, I wouldn't enjoy it either. And that's empathy, and that makes him a better person. People who have had particular brain injuries can lose empathy through no fault of their own. And they're very challenging people to be around, because they can't put themselves in your place, so they can't imagine what it's like. They can't see the outcomes of their actions as they relate to you. But we can. And empathy isn't something that you simply grow into, like the height that you're going to have, and that's what you have until you start the shrinking process at the other end of life. We can grow in empathy. We can work on empathy. We can get better at it, and we are required, suggested, whatever language you want to use here, to do that. Think of people who are in a less pleasant situation as you, and don't think of them as being out there, but imagine what it would be like if you were there, and think of them from that perspective. Because with empathy comes sympathy and all of the things that we want that make us a better person. So this, you know, why do we do this? Because it makes us better people. More empathy is not a bad thing. It's a good thing, and we are called to do it by the writer of Hebrews. We drop down to verse 4, the next verse, and it says, marriage should be honored by all, and the marriage bed kept pure. God will judge the adulterer. This isn't just about marriage. This is about fidelity, about being faithful to what we are called, to the relationships we're called to be. Perhaps our primary or our most significant relationship with other people is our marriage, if we are married. But all of our relationships with our family members, our parents and siblings and children, our close friends, our acquaintances, the strangers, we're called to be faithful in our relationships with them, to not take advantage of them, to not be manipulative. Well, why? Why would we want to be faithful in all things? Well, if you want to take just a crass reason, I've never met anybody who tends to be faithless who is happier than someone who's faithful. If you're faithless in your relationships, it changes you in ways that you don't want to be changed. People who are engaged in that kind of, whether it's adultery or whether it's just sneaking around behind people they're in relationship with, tend to think everybody is sneaking around, and they look at the world with suspicious eyes. We don't want to be that kind of person. We don't want to be the kind of person that develops a reputation of, well, you don't want to be very close friends with them, because who knows what they'll do. No, we don't want any of those things. We want to be faithful in our relationships with people and with the things and all of the things we can be in relationship with, including pets and the possessions and all of those things, because that makes us the kind of person we want to be. and the kind of person people want us or want to be around. The next one says, keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have. And not just as some kind of gritting your teeth exercise of the discipline of contentment, whatever that would look like, but rather because God has said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. We want to be content because content people are happier people. They're easier to be around. People who are always worried about whether they're going to have enough can be very tiring to be. It can be very tiring to be around. People who are always wanting more are just exhausting to be around. We don't want to be those kind of people. We want to be the people who look at what we have and say, this is what we have, and it comes from God. And God has promised to make up any lack that we see. He said, I'll never leave you, I'll never forsake you. He goes on to say, so we say with confidence, the Lord is my helper, I will not be afraid. What can people do to me? Contentment is an orientation to the world that says, what I have is sufficient for what I am called to do. Is it everything I want? Possibly not. Is it everything I need? Yes, it is. When we look at what God has called us to do, when we look at the people God has called us to become, we look at what we have, and we say, this is the situation we're in that we can move forward from, that we can grow in. Our situation does not mean that God has forgotten us in any way. God has said, I will always be with you. Contentment is a great thing to have. We like being around content people. If you can look at the world from a perspective that says, I have what I need, you don't have that sense that every time anybody gets something, it somehow diminishes you. People who don't have a sense of contentment tend to look at the entire world as a zero-sum game. And a zero-sum game or a zero-sum orientation says that there's only a certain amount of goodness. And if anybody else gets that goodness, that's less goodness that I might have. And that's wrong. It's as wrong can be. There is no limit to goodness because God, the everything God, omniscient, omnipresent, all those omnis, is the source of goodness. Contentment allows us to enjoy what we have. And if we're content, we're more likely to be hospitable with it and generous with it. If we're worried, if we have a miserly mentality that says, I only have this much and it's probably not enough, I need more, I can't give any to you. That's an unpleasant way to live your life. It's a hard way to live your life. It reduces every relationship to a transaction. And that's not what we're called to, and that's not what we want. We look at all of these things, and we're reminded that Jesus Christ is the same yesterday and today and forever. Because the writer of Hebrews is addressing these words to people who have a relationship with God through Jesus or want one. And the writer of Hebrews is saying, these things come and can come because we serve a God who is the same and always has been the same. Jesus has always loved us. Oh, there was a period of time of some decades when he walked among human beings just like us and demonstrated that love to the most profound degree that we can imagine by giving up his life for us. But he loved us before. He loved us then and he loves us now and he'll love us forever because Jesus doesn't change the way we do. All of us have things in our past that we did love that we no longer do. Might be something as trivial as a sporting team or a flavor of fizzy soda. Might be more profound than that, but our tastes change. What we love changes. Jesus doesn't change. From before the beginning of the creation of everything, Jesus loved us enough to give his life for us. And then he came and he showed that he did. And now we live in the reality that he did. And those are all good reasons to do these things. There's nothing wrong with wanting to become a better person. Develop your empathy, develop your hospitality, be content because it makes you a better person, makes you happier, makes you less stressed and anxious. Those are all, there's nothing wrong with any of those. But the last two verses of our Hebrews text that we read today sum up the most significant reason why we want to do these things. Beginning of verse 15. Through Jesus, therefore, let us continue to offer to God a sacrifice of praise, the fruit of lips that confess his name. And then verse 16, which is the big one, at least for this text, for this day. And do not forget to do good and to share with others, which sums up everything that we've already talked about. For with such sacrifices, God is pleased. We want to please God. And we want to please God, not because we're afraid God will strike us dead if we don't please him enough. It's not a fear or a terror kind of thing. We want to please God because we love God, because we're in a relationship with him. When I give Heather flowers, when I give my wife flowers, it's not because I'm afraid of her. It's not because I'm afraid that the next time I make a mistake, and I make many, that she'll walk out the door, so I'll have a preemptive flower strike. I give Heather flowers because it makes her happy. And it makes me happy to give her flowers. And you create a virtuous circle where your happiness becomes greater because of their happiness and theirs because of yours, until sometimes you wonder if you're just going to explode with happiness. We want to please God for the same reason. We want to please God because we want God to be pleased, because we do. It's not that we please God, therefore we will get this. We're in a relationship with God, a God who loves us, a God whom we love, in the same way that a relationship of love with the people we married, the families into which we were inserted, which hopefully is a place of love for you. I realize there are challenges. Our friends, even our acquaintances. We do this because we want to please them, not because we want something out of them. It's not a manipulative kind of thing. I don't want to please God so he'll then bless me with a winning lottery ticket. Or anything. God's already said, I'm going to take care of you. Long before we get to this part in this Hebrews reading, we already have God saying, I will never leave you, I will never forsake you, I'll be with you forever. Jesus said, it's the same. Jesus' love for us is the same always. And then we get to this part, and we want to please God in with that as a backdrop, not fear, not a desperate desire to make God do things for us, but because we want to please him the same way we want to please the people who are around us. Who among us hasn't just taken a chance and given somebody something hoping that they'll like it? They so frequently do. And often they'll say, well, what's this for? And I say, well, just because. You don't need a reason to please the people that are in your circle. We don't need a reason to please God. We just want to. But we might not know how to do it. I know how to please Heather. I know how to please my kids. I know how to please lots of people. If I'm wondering about, well, how do I please God? I can't give God flowers. But if I want to know how to please God, there's some really good suggestions in Hebrews 13. We've just talked about them. It doesn't mean they're easy, or it doesn't mean that they're always easy. Sometimes they're really hard. You'll notice it says, a sacrifice of praise. You'll notice that it says, do good and to share with others, for with such sacrifices God is pleased. Every time you do something nice for someone, there is the potential for it to be a sacrifice. Whether it takes money to buy the flowers or buy the chocolates or whatever it might be that you could have spent on yourself, or you do something nice for someone and they misunderstand or they don't care or they don't notice. These are sacrifices. These can be tough. And sometimes we're called to do much more than that. My late parents were called to the sacrifice of loving a wayward child for a very long time. I'm very happy that I came back long before they died. And they could see that, yes, it was worth it. But if that never would have happened, they would have continued, and that would have been a sacrifice. Sometimes we're called to do hard things, here, some of the things we're called to do are not easy. But we do them anyway. And on those days when we can't think of any reason why we should do them, I commend to you Hebrews chapter 13, verse 16. Because when we do them, God is pleased. We're going to sing about taking up our cross in a moment. When we do that, we do it not out of a masochistic sense of I'm somehow called to suffer. We do it because we want to please God. We're hospitable and faithful. We try to grow in empathy. We try to become the people we were created to be because it pleases God and it makes us better. The closer we come to the people we were created to be, the happier, the more satisfied we are with the lives we have. And it pleases God at the same time. There's a win-win if I've ever heard one. So why do we do these things? Simple. They're good for us, and they please God. What more reasons do we need than those? Amen.